Yeah, I just want to say that the whole idea of coercion in treatment is based on a fallacy, which is addiction is defined by compulsive behavior despite negative consequences. Negative consequences is another word for punishment. If negative consequences work to stop addiction, addiction would not exist. So the whole thing that this is based on is this idea that we need to hit bottom, we need to break you, we need to, like, you know, make you do horrible labor, and we need to tell you you're a piece of crap, and all of this stuff is based on this idea that more, that what people with addiction need to get better is more punishment. And what harm reduction shows us is actually what people need to get better is more compassion.
Yep. And yep. Yep.
Thank you. And when treatment is based on this, like, we're going to grind you into the ground thing, and we know it has a 10% success rate, why would anybody voluntarily show up for that? Why would they? No rational person would. Again, in contrast, people show up for needle exchange. People show up for Howard's program, which is wonderful and motivates people and meets people where they're at. When you stop thinking that people with addiction are out there having a ton of fun and we need to just interrupt them and, like, drag them in because they're just having too much fun and pleasure, you know, this is, you know, right. And so the whole coercive model is just completely backwards. If it worked, we wouldn't be sitting here.
So we're going to pass the microphone to Denicia, but on the way as it travels, I'm just going to say, going back to drug testing real quickly, there is also an overlay of drug testing that is quite spooky and terrifying in the sense of our notion of our increasing society of surveillance and how much information the government has about us, quantifies about us, puts in computers, and spreads out about us. And drug testing is exactly that type of information that is put there and can be then spread about us. And so there's this notion of drug testing being a linchpin in loss of privacy on one hand, but also the notion that when you enter a system of coerced treatment, your relationship as a patient, they'll call you a client, a patient to a medical or treatment provider is fundamentally perverted. Because the confidentiality that normally pertains between doctor and patient is no longer in the context of coerced treatment, because there's a judge, there's a probation officer, or there's some other law enforcement official who has access to all that information that your treatment provider does as well. And so what's viewed as a central part of therapy, confidentiality, is destroyed and blown out the window in the context of coerced treatment. So I wanted to add that overlay to the drug testing quagmire. Denicia.
You know, I think what's increasingly clear to me, as you know, I'm not someone that's attended drug reform conferences before, but what's increasingly clear to me is that we live in different realities, right? So when we talk about surveillance, for example, as increasing surveillance, that's something that has never ended in communities of color, that often, or the basis of the wealth of this country is in colonization and the enslavement of people. So that colonization has never ended for our communities. But in specifically when we look at drug tests, often as we talk about mass incarceration, we talk about losing men of color and why black men, indigenous men, while they make up the biggest number, the fastest growing number are black and indigenous and other women of color. And so we have to look specifically at that context when we think about drug testing. In Tennessee, they have recently passed a bill that women are allowed to be charged with felony assault charges if their child tests positive for neonatal abstinence syndrome. So, when we think about the context, you know, this isn't new for communities of color that you're criminalized when getting healthcare, but we need to think about how dangerous that is, in particular for pregnant women, and not just because they're carrying children, but for their own lives as well. So in New Mexico, our particular context is, you know, some hospitals have tried to take a more progressive context and said, oh, we're only going to drug test people if we feel there's a real danger. And some hospitals are just testing every single person that comes into the hospital and is pregnant. But what it looks like is the exact same thing, because the only people that get profiled for drug tests are people that are young parents, that have track marks on their arms, are people that have darker skin, and so we see the exact same policies. So sometimes when we see this progressive movement, we don't have the lived effects for people in our communities.
Thank you.
Daniel, I want to say something. I want you to take a look at this same issue from the experience of a drug addict, where you're doing something to yourself every day, many times a day, that you know is crazy, it's madness, and you cannot stop yourself. There is some part of you inside that is craving to be stopped. That yes, you want somebody to stop you from what you're doing to yourself. The stealing, the risks, the disease, the madness. And so the criminal justice system, on some level, steps in and stops you. I mean, on some level, that's what I wanted. On some level. Because I was totally out of control. And that's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with addiction. It's not just these nice people who are just, you know, dipping and dabbing and getting a little buzz on now and again. No, these people, we're breaking into your fucking apartments. We're ripping you off in the street. We're doing stupid, crazy shit. So the criminal justice system steps in. Is that so bad?
Is it okay if I say something?
Is that so bad?
I would,
real
I,
quick.
Okay.
Is that so bad?
I'm going to tell the truth. If you're committing crimes
bad.
That are harming other people and that are predatory, absolutely
yep.
the criminal justice system should step in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing nothing but harming yourself, I don't think so. And I think that if there's lots of people with addictions that do not do that stuff. And that obviously, a lot of that has to do with privilege. But it is a complicated, you know, if you've met one person with addiction, you've met one person with addiction. It is not, we are not all the same.
Yeah.
But I will say that if we want a better drug court system, the way to go about it would be is, yes, if somebody's committing a real crime, that's harming the community, and we got to do something about that. So what we should have, I would think, is that the judge should say, right, you're committing these crimes, you obviously have a substance use disorder, here's a list of multiple treatment options, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold there, because we're actually going to turn to that next, and we're going to design a system very shortly, but I need to do a little data dump on you all, based on this last little interchange, which is, as Maya said, if you have a drug problem and are harming others, you ought to have access to treatment perhaps through the criminal justice system, because you're harming others and your underlying condition has a drug component to it. But here's the fact. Most drug courts in the United States, and by most I'm talking well over 95%, do not create eligibility for people in their drug courts who harm others. Drug courts, for the vast majority, are only open to people who are caught with drugs or test positive for drugs or are using drugs,
yep.
many of whom are themselves not drug dependent. And so these are people filling our drug courts who are not harming others,
yep.
and many of whom might not be addicted or dependent. And so that's something we need to know when we're talking about how we're employing our drug treatment in our criminal justice system in these diversion alternatives. So that's one fact. Maya alluded to the statistic, less than 10% of people who go into drug courts are successful in drug courts. And there's lots of data out there. And I asked our panelists not to be data heavy on this panel and cite lots of studies. I do want to tell you where those studies can be found. Many of them can be found in Maya's writings over the years. Others can be found in an excellent publication by the Open Society Foundation that Daniel Wolf has contributed to about drug courts that analyzes all the data and all the studies that have been done on drug courts in the United States and elsewhere. In that publication is in the publications in the on the table, on the Open Society Foundation table, on the publications table. Drug Policy Alliance has also collected the data, and you can find the data showing the lack of efficacy of drug treatment through drug courts. But if that is the background, and some of this is new to some of you in this room, if that's the basic background, that drug courts don't really treat people who harm others, who would benefit most in society, would benefit most from having treatment, and they're not providing good treatment, and it's failing most people who go through those court systems, why do they have such a great, solid reputation across the board in the United States? Why is their media, the media, when you read that open, when you open the paper or see an article about drug courts, it's always positive? And so I want to ask the two people who have some journalistic background on our panel, Alice in a former life and Maya in a current life, why have drug courts gotten a pass in the public perception, and none of these criticisms are being heard really outside this room?
I'll start with that, and my background is I was a journalist for 31 years before, about 70 years ago, I decided to take off the gloves and be a real advocate. And so I think the reason is that the criminal justice system and our industrial capitalist system has basically bought into the drug court as an easy solution that, according to the evidence that people have put out and but that has gotten the attention, saves money. It's the kind of thing that people who want looking for simplistic solutions can latch onto. And while there are lots of smart and industrious and journalists who like to dig into things, there also are many people who are taking what's fed to them in the media. And the more we see the media expanding into anybody being able to put out anything that they choose, that there are fewer filters, which is both good and bad in terms of the amount of information that's out. It's very hard to change a narrative that's out there. However, and I think it's up to us to help by providing journalists with this other view in ways that are very easy for journalists to take and run with. So that's stories of people who have been totally harmed by drug courts. That's stories that tell, that's what journalists are looking for, and looking for a simple fact sheet that sums up the fact that the evidence is really lacking. And that if you take this and really look at the evidence for drug courts, it's not there. And so you need that to contradict the message that's coming from politicians and the sort of the pathway. And one other thing I want to say is that I think there's a counter trend that's happening in the healthcare system that could be used as part of that argument pitch to make to journalists, which is the movement in healthcare right now is looking at the complex underlying issues in healthcare and stepping back and saying we can't just treat people with healthcare, we need to look at social and economic determinants. There are multiple innovative programs that are being funded by all different sources, philanthropy, the government, et cetera, looking at how do we build a better mousetrap for building together health and social services, essentially, very similar to the harm reduction model, diversion model that people have been talking about. You need all those things. And at the heart of that is that the best, people get better when they have voluntary treatment and when they're engaged in their own health. And that issue about self-empowerment and self-engagement is a whole other movement that's going on in healthcare. So I really think we could use those things to help turn, the dime on this.
Thanks. So with regard to the media and drug courts, the media has this sort of false objectivity thing going on, and they love solutions that appear to be in the middle between left and right. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason that there has been a real love for drug courts. The other reason, I actually think the success rate is actually 50%, not 10%. The 10% I was citing was the rate for drug treatment long-term, and it's actually 10 to 20%, to be fair. But the 50% has to be understood in the context of that these people are selected to be the ones most likely to succeed before they get into the program in the first place. So that
cherry picking of clients.
Should, yeah, that should be taken with a grain of salt there. I think, you know, the way the media also looks at this, you know, the media has been the biggest purveyor of this idea that you need to hit bottom before you can get better. And the drug courts, you know, Martin Sheen's out there saying we need the hammer to get people into drug courts. Yeah, that worked really well. But, you know, again, until we get rid of this idea that what people with addiction need is more trauma and more punishment and more harm, you know, the media is going to keep up with this sort of 12-step narrative about sin and redemption.
Thanks. Absolutely.
The other thing with the media is that they're taking what they hear and they're not delving into it because they're comfortable with the attitude that, all right, these people aren't going to jail. Treatment is better than jail, so they need to be soft on that. So instead of asking a direct question, even when there's a 50% supposedly success rate through drug treatment courts, is out of that 50% that's left over, if they're not succeeding and sober through the drug court, they're either incarcerated or they're dead. They don't count how many are dead. So you have had over 20 years of these drug courts with, say, 50% success rate, and you said how many people are going through a year, 125,000 people. If it's only 50%, then every year, the other 50%, which we don't know, how many are in jail and how many die. They do not count it anywhere. So when they start to talk about if a journalist would delve into the numbers and ask the right questions or force the National Association of Drug Court Professionals to ask the right questions in their research, then maybe we would get somewhere, but they don't. And when the drug courts evaluate, or when they do the evaluations of the drug courts, that's all self-reported. And there's target goals that they're trying to meet, and has nothing to do with the health of the people that are going through the courts at all.